With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This hour of the Annie Fry Show is sponsored by The Loading Dock. River views, outdoor dining, live music, and overnight accommodations. Visit GraftonLoadingDock.com.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not married to sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not married to sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Well, I think what's under consideration is a proposal that Senator Wyden and the Senate Finance Committee have been looking at that would impose a tax on unrealized capital gains on liquid assets held by extremely wealthy individuals, billionaires. I wouldn't call that a wealth tax.
So there you have the Treasury Secretary Yellen talking about taxing unrealized capital gains. And then she tacks on that prepositional phrase about billionaires. And so that's supposed to make you be like, oh, she's not talking about me. But it's important to note right now that the government is suggesting that they are going to tax money that you don't actually have in your hands. That this is the possibility of how they're going to make everything for people like you cost $0. It never works that way, does it? Well, let's talk to Stephen Moore about it. Stephen Moore is a senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks, and he is here with us today. Stephen, oh my goodness, that made my skin crawl, and I am not a billionaire. What did you think about that?
Well, you're on your way to becoming a billionaire, but I think you put it well. You know, if you look at the founding of the income tax, the personal income tax, which came into existence about 100 years ago, at the time, all of the arguments that are being made now about, gee, this will only affect, people who make over X amount of money, you know, $1 million, $1 billion, that was what they said about the original income tax, and now we all pay it. And you did a really good job of describing how this really works. It means that if you have an asset, a painting or a Picasso, or do you have any Picassos?
No, my children draw them though. So.
but any kind of assets you might have, the value of your home, the value of your stock portfolio, they're going to try to calculate every year how much it's gone up, and then they're going to tax you on it. Well, if you don't sell it, you don't have the money, right? It's just something that, you know, at the time you sell it, you'll have the money. So where are people going to get the money to pay the tax?
It's really frightening to hear the confidence with which they discuss these things. Also, here, I'm going to play this for you. More from Secretary Yellen on inflation.
And of course, Americans haven't seen inflation like we've experienced recently in a long time.
Yeah.
So we're realizing this inflation is here. And what we're hearing from the people in the government is that it's going to be here for some time. Let's forget about the billionaires with their Picassos. What about the people who are having to pay more for milk, bread, and gasoline each and every day?
Well, they're feeling the hurt, aren't they? And we all are. I mean, you are, I am, the people listening to the show. a friend went to the Walmart the other day to stock up on some supplies, said they could barely get in the door. There were so many people just filling up on whatever they could get their hands on, because we're going to have shortages if this situation continues with the high inflation and with the labor shortage of labor to do the jobs. And it's gotten to a crisis point of view. And, you know, I was quite stunned, actually, by the press conference that, the town hall meeting that Biden had with Anderson Cooper at CNN the other night, where he was asked, remember? And he was asked about the gas prices. Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do about that. It's like, gee, that inspires confidence. He said, oh, maybe next year gas prices will come down. I think gas prices are probably going to go higher before they go lower. And we're looking at $4 to $5 a gallon gasoline, which is going to be a real hardship on working class Americans. The Biden's economist the other day said, oh, well, that's just the high class people. What? I don't know if I constitute high class, but I'm sure paying the pain of all of these higher prices for everything from, you know, a steak to potatoes to produce to, you know, go to a movie and like pay the, you know, we paid like $24 to see the James Bond movie the other night. I remember when it used to be like $4 to see the movie. So all of these things are going up so fast in price, and it's killing people on fixed incomes, middle income people. I just feel right now, Annie, like the wheels are coming off. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a president who doesn't exactly know what he's doing, nor do the people in his administration. I mean, do you think Pete Buttigieg knows anything about the supply chain? I mean, after all, he was his qualification is he was the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. I mean, come on. I mean, we need to bring in some people who know something about business. That's what I loved about Trump, by the way. Trump was a businessman who knew how to deal with a crisis like this. Now, he knew how to manage large operations. He knew how to meet a payroll. I just don't think any of the people in the Biden, not just Biden and Kamala Harris, but the whole team, there's not a lot of talent there.
Yeah, I agree with you. We're speaking with senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks, Stephen Moore. I want to ask you, this is kind of a high-level, broad view kind of question, but I think it's so important, especially when you hear the Treasury Secretary Yellen speaking this way. We certainly have heard people in the Biden administration speaking this way. And you contrast it to Donald Trump, who was never ashamed of any wealth that he's ever had. The fundamental difference between these people when they're in charge, whose money is all of this money anyway? Who makes the decision on who gets to keep what or who gets to take what? Because I hear Democrats almost acting charitable and allowing wealthy people to keep a portion of their wealth. And I hear Republicans talk about taking that money when they're talking about taxing. There's a huge difference in approach here. And this party that's in charge right now seems to be entitled to any of our money, and they're willing to allow us to keep some of it.
So let's take someone like Jeff Bezos, who is, arguably the richest person in the world. If he's not the richest, he's in the top three or four. You know, his net worth right now is estimated to be close to $100 billion. So this guy is really, really, really rich, right? But think of what Jeff Bezos, and I don't like Jeff Bezos personally. I don't agree with his politics, but what a company he has built in Amazon. I mean, you can go on Amazon and within, 48 hours, you can pretty much order anything you want. They'll deliver it to your door. It's an incredible operation, and he's a great businessman. And, you know, he was asked about this wealth issue. I mean, why should you have so much wealth? And he said, I own about 17% of Amazon stock. So, you know, he said, and that's close to $2 trillion company now. He said, so maybe I've got $100 billion, but that means if it's worth $2 trillion, that means, $1.9 trillion I've created of wealth for everyone else, for people who own 401k plans, for people who have pension plans, for people who own stock. I mean, think of what, and not to mention the services provided. But the point of all this is that why do we demonize people who are successful in America? Since when do we do that? Do we demonize, Edison? And do we demonize people like Henry Ford and, Vanderbilt and,
Hollywood actors and performers and entertainers who are famously wealthy for, entertainment, let alone listing off people who've actually created things that have caused other people to be successful.
And the other question is, who do you think can spend that money better? Well, look, there's only so much money Jeff Bezos can spend, right? I mean, you know, he might have caviar and lobster and champagne every night for dinner, but, you know, one person can only spend. So that means the vast, vast majority of his money is going to be given out in charitable contributions and things like that. Well, who do you want to spend that money? Do you want the government and the politicians to spend it, or the guy who earned it? And, I think the guy who earned it. You know, look at all the great museums and all the great, you know, cultural things we have in this country. So many of the charities were built with the money from people who made successful companies. And since, look, the American dream is to get rich, right? That's what the American dream is. And why is it if you get rich, then we're going to take, you know, half of your money away from you? I don't find the logic of that. I think it's un-American.
Yeah, I agree. Stephen Moore with us right now. You wrote a book, Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. You've advised some of the most powerful people in the world on economics. I'm curious, just, you know, unless that would be wonderful if President Biden has called upon you for advisement. I suspect he hasn't. What's your Monday morning quarterback assessment of where this administration is headed? We're not even a year into it.
Well, when you talk about my advising on economics, some of the most influential people in the world, I put you on that list. So.
Yeah. I do need your advice.
So, it's an honor to be your chief economist for the Annie Fry Show. Look, if I were talking to Joe Biden, I'd simply say this. Let's grow the economy. Let's not try to make rich people poor. Let's try to make poor people rich. Let's try to create an environment that allows everyone to attain what they want in their life. And there's no guarantees in life that you're going to get what you want, right? But this is a land of opportunity. And it was built, the goose that lays the golden eggs is the free enterprise system. It's why Americans are the richest. Even our poor people are rich relative to, you know, people in other countries.
Yeah.
Let's not mess up this system. Yes, of course we need government. We need taxes to pay for vital services. But do we really need the government to pay for childcare? Do we need the government to now get involved in, you know, I mean, we used to call that babysitting. Right? That was my first job, by the way, babysitting. And I didn't have a college degree. And now that, did you see they want to say, if you want to babysit, you have to have a college degree now.
I know you're supposed to, as a parent, I know that there are babysitters, specifically in California, that are, they have paid sick days, paid time off. You got to pay them overtime. It's definitely, wait a second. I'm like blown away. I'm trying to think of you babysitting little kids. Do you still do this?
I would love to see this. But here's the other thing about this free childcare stuff. Wait a minute. Think about this. By the way, I think working women are great, and I love them, and they work amazing. I know you're a working woman, working mothers. But there are also a lot of mothers who make the financial sacrifice as a couple with their husband to stay home, right, and take care of their kids. So, and by the way, those couples with only one person earning money have a lower income than the couples with two incomes, but they make that financial sacrifice for one reason or another. They think it might be better for their kids, and I'm not passing judgment one way or the other, but this discriminates against the mothers who are staying at home and making that financial sacrifice, right? You know, I don't get the logic of a lot of this stuff, but let's not kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. We are the greatest country in the world. Why is it that everybody wants to come here, Annie? Everybody around the world wants to come here. People with red skin, brown skin, black skin, you know, people are poor, rich. Everybody wants to come here because they understand the Statue of Liberty, that this is a place where we have freedom, liberty. I've seen immigrants literally kiss the ground when they get here. And I don't want to see America be more like France and Italy and Spain and the European countries. I we are a special place on the globe, and it's because we have had limited government. We have a constitutional form of representative, we're not supposed to have a massive federal government. Why does the government have to build the infrastructure, the roads? Why can't that be done by the states? Why can't that be done by local governments? Why can't that be done by private businesses? It seems to me the left thinks every problem is going to be solved in Washington. And I guarantee you, the only people going to get rich on that are people in Washington.
Yep. And when they're done solving all those problems, they'll make up new ones to solve with more of your tax
exactly.
dollars. It's so frustrating.
Well, no, they're going to solve. See, this is, you got it wrong there. They create the problem, and then they create the problem, and then they figure out how to solve the problem that they themselves created.
In the middle of that circle of life, there they have their hand in your back pocket. That's the frustrating part. Stephen Moore, it's great to speak with you. Thank you so much for the time today. People need to go check out Trumponomics, because I have a feeling there's a possibility maybe you'll be advising a President Trump.
Yeah.
Again,
oh,
in the future.
By the way, one other quick thing, Annie. I want everybody to go to PragerU.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you familiar with PragerU?
Oh yes, wonderful.
I have a new video that just came out a few days ago on PragerU. It already has almost 2 million views. It's called The Bankrupting of America, and it's a great five-minute tutorial. Show it to your kids, show it to your family, show it to your friends, show it to your colleagues, show it to your enemies. Everybody should watch this video about the dangers of this massive multi-trillion-dollar spending bill that is coming up. We will bankrupt our country if we continue to spend and borrow like this.
I am thinking of you babysitting kids back then, giving them the PragerU speeches. And
you know what I got paid? I got paid $1.50 an hour.
Oh, it was worth it, I'm sure. Good life lessons. Thank you, Stephen. Right. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye. Senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks. Can you imagine being babysat by Stephen Moore?
I think that would be fantastic.
If he wants to babysit my kids and teach them some things, you come on down to Southern Illinois.
Like, your kids would be dressed in business suits and have like their budgets worked out.
Yeah, they come back and they have their like $5 a week budget for going to Disney World. How they're going to, he'd be like, don't spend that money at Disney World, invest it. And my kids would be like disappointed. You know what? I know each one of my kids. I know who would be like, yes, I believe in what Stephen Moore has to say, and I will invest it. And the other ones would be like, heck no, I'm spending that on some Mickey ears.
And they'd be billionaires by the time they were your age.
I think one of them has the potential.
There it is.
The other ones will be asking the billionaire sister for...
Yeah, you don't need everybody in your family to be a billionaire. Just one.
That's why I have four kids. I'm just playing the odds here. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Mark Cox is going to join us. We're going to talk a little bit about Sam Page at the Blues game. Did the camera just catch him for a second when he didn't have the mask on? Is this the first time they found Sam Page at a public event without a mask on? It isn't. I'm just going to give you that little tip here. Mark Cox is going to sound off on this when we come back. Don't go away.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show. Interact with Annie on Facebook. The Annie Fry Show.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Hope you're having a wonderful Monday afternoon. We're pretty much halfway done with Monday. We can put it on as we're in the back half of Monday. So thanks for being with us. Let's get to our guest, Mark Cox.
The conservative, so-called, is the one that says, less government. Get off my back.
I'm the best there is at what I do. You're a lying, dog-faced pony soldier.
I wouldn't make it a habit calling me that, son.
And that's the bottom line.
So we got Mark Cox on with us right now. Marks, there's no, I thought of you first when I saw Sam Page having a good old time at the St. Louis, which who wouldn't be having a good time? The Blues are freaking awesome right now. But I noticed something was missing from Sam Page's face. And I have a feeling you got something to say about that.
Well, there's a whole lot missing when it comes to Sam Page, in my opinion, including his lack of the irony in what he was up to this weekend. You know, I was with Sam Page and not at the same table at an event several weeks ago. Same thing. He travels to the city where there's also a mask mandate after warning all of us that it may not be safe to hold Halloween and, you know, family events and holidays in our home. And he's around other people face-to-face a few inches away, but he doesn't want you to be able to do that. It's an amazing display of hypocrisy, and I'm so glad somebody captured him at the Blues game this weekend.
Mark, you know, I had somebody reply to me on Twitter. I shared that picture, and somebody replied, Annie, you know, there were a lot of people at the Blues game who weren't wearing their masks. In fact, most people weren't wearing their masks. And I'm like, I think you're missing the point here.
I think you're completely missing the point. If I'd been at the Blues game, I wouldn't have been wearing my mask. That's the whole thing about it is that, listen, Sam, you seem to realize that we're right, and yet you want to force these ridiculous mandates on people in the face of COVID rates dropping like a rock. Yesterday, I know you've probably seen it by now, Rochelle Walensky from the CDC said that effectively people are, there's somebody working next door to the house here. There are people that might have to go to re-education camps if we can't convince them appropriately that they've got to be re-educated.
Oh my God.
We might have to re-educate you or send you to counseling if you don't see our point of view. That's baffling to me.
It's un-American. Sir feels certainly un-American.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when did we get to the point where people weren't, I mean, we're allowed to make decisions for ourselves. Anytime you make a choice regarding your health, you know, I've used this illustration before on the air. You know, if somebody is unfortunately presented with the information that they have cancer, they're given options. And some of those options are riskier than others, but the choice is the patient's to make. The doctor doesn't come in and say, this is what you're going to have to do. You know, we make these decisions for ourselves. So then you ask yourself, well, COVID is about, you know, how your decisions might affect other people. Well, we have a vaccine, so you can protect yourself right now. People can arm themselves with what they need to arm themselves to protect themselves as much as they deem necessary. There's a conversation about science, and there's a conversation about freedoms. And it seems to me that people get those confused when they're arguing with one another.
Yes.
Talking about different things. The freedom thing here is a big deal, regardless if Joe Biden wants to laugh that off in his speeches.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I love it when I'm in a debate with somebody on this, either on social media or on the air, and they bring up the fact, well, you Trump supporters, this is you Trump supporters trying to politicize this. I said, you know, we might not have the vaccine if not for Donald Trump. I'm glad that it's an option because it's what we needed solely to get back to normal. That doesn't mean that it's an end-all, be-all cure for COVID, but it means that people have the ability to make the choice. They know what the risks are. And, you know, I heard overnight that another one of our local high schools here was reimposing a mask mandate in the city at SLU High School, is the reports that I read, because of the recommendations of the city of St. Louis Department of Health. And again, all they want to talk about is the science, Annie, but where is it? COVID rates have dropped significantly, and they're not a problem to begin with in our schools. And they don't pose a threat to our children. And our county executive tells us one thing and turns around and does something else.
Yeah. You know, when you hear those individuals want to point at Trump supporters for making it
before
political
or after the election, should Americans take it and would you take it?
If the public health professionals, if Dr. Fauci, if the doctors tell us that we should take it, I'll be the first in line to take it. Absolutely. But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
I just want to bang my head into the wall. When, because I've heard that too. People say, you know, that this is being made political by Republicans. Yes. I'm going to, in a very mature mom voice, say, no, you started it. The Democrats are the ones who started this. It is Trump's vaccine. Trump got the vaccine. Trump told people to get the vaccine. Joe Biden got the Trump vaccine because he wasn't president yet when he got the vaccine. We need people out there telling the truth about what's really going on here, because I feel like freedom, First Amendment, all this type of stuff, we're losing ground under this administration, and it's not even been a year yet.
Well, we got a daily update on the number of deaths. We got a monthly update. We got a yearly total. We got a since the pandemic began update routinely during the campaign a year ago. And Joe Biden came right out and said every one of these deaths is on Donald Trump's shoulders, or Donald Trump's watch, or however he put that. And suddenly we don't get those updates anymore. And my understanding is that total has doubled since last year, but suddenly they're not on Joe Biden's shoulders. Who's making this political?
Yeah, it's so obvious, and I think Americans across the country are waking up to it. I want to shift gears. We're speaking with Mark Cox. He's the host of the Mark Cox Morning Show right here on 97.1, 5 a.m., which is an ungodly time, all the way to 9 a.m. But I know that time now, being a mom of a four-month-old, so I'm more frequent with that time these days than I have been in the past. You've been following the Missouri Senate race to replace Roy Blunt, who is retiring. What can you tell us about this race? How is it shaping up, and who are the frontrunners?
Well, you know, Annie, I pointed this out today. I had a conversation with Rodney Boyd, and I said, I wonder if there's ever been another time in the history of a Missouri Senate race where the five people vying in the Republican primary, or for that matter, any party primary, weren't real anxious to have the endorsement of the incumbent of their own party. Hmm. I think this may be the year. Because yesterday, Roy Blunt went on one of the morning shows, maybe this week, or CBS, one of the morning shows, and he basically blasted Donald Trump again and lectured Donald Trump about what he should and shouldn't be focusing on right now. Basically told him not to stop focusing on 2020 and spend more time looking ahead. We should always look ahead. You know, but between that and some of his January 6th comments, you got five people running in the primary in Missouri who are running away from Roy Blunt because they want Donald Trump's endorsement, and they probably don't want Roy Blunt's endorsement. You know, there have been a number of polls out. It really depends on who you talk to. In all but one of the polls I've seen, Eric Greitens is leading by anywhere from 2 to 10%, roughly. The Greitens people tell you it's more than that. Eric Schmidt was second. Vicky Hartzler was third. But there's been one ad run that I've seen so far in this primary, and that's Vicky Hartzler. And in it, she took swipes at Schmidt for not being conservative enough, and she took swipes at Eric Greitens for his hairdresser situation, right, his affair that he had before he ran for office. So I think things are going to shape up a little differently in the coming 4 months. You know, right after the first of the year is when this thing starts in earnest. And then probably by March, we're in full swing. I don't know. Greitens right now, I think Vicky Hartzler is going to be a player in this because she's collected as much or more money than anyone, and she's already starting to fire shots at the other candidates.
Well, it's going to be an interesting race to watch, and you would think that what I would call now a red state of Missouri would go Republican one way or the other, but the primary is going to be an interesting one, and there's nobody following it more closely than you are on the Mark Cox Morning Show. So we'll be tuned in.
Well, thank you for that. We've had two of the candidates on our Senate stage event so far. We're trying to schedule with Eric Schmidt right now, and then we're going to get Billy Long and Vicky Hartzler next. So stay tuned for details on all that, Annie. Thank you.
Also, let me say cheers to you on your new podcast, The Mash. I love whiskey. And you are doing a podcast that people can check out in addition to what you do in your normal gig on the morning show here. Just give me a real quick precursor of what people might get to hear if they subscribe to that.
So I'm fascinated by bourbon because I have no idea how to make it. But I enjoy the hell out of drinking it. So I decided to do a podcast where I would talk to people who are not only experts at it, but in many cases the master distillers at some of these biggest distillers in the country. Just today, we spoke with Watch me not be able to think of her name now. We spoke with the head distiller from Widow Jane.
Oh, cool.
One of the few women head distillers in the country. And she talked a little bit about that in the podcast, about how, you know, that not that it makes her any better or any worse at her job, but she said women have a different palate than men, and sometimes they're better detecting this flavor or that flavor in the whiskey, and she thinks it gives her, you know, unique standing in the business. That's one example. Buffalo Trace, Four Roses, Redwood Empire. I talked to a bunch of master distillers, and also any people who are just bourbon aficionados who like to talk about their favorite bourbon, whether it's the most expensive one on the shelf or not. So that's what we're trying to do.
Awesome. Well, people can subscribe to that. It's his own podcast, right? Or is it part of the Mark Cox Morning Show podcast?
No, it's a separate podcast. It has nothing to do with politics. We just talk about bourbon. You can find it at 971talk.com under the podcast or wherever you download your favorite podcast.
I disagree that bourbon has a lot to do with politics. Just maybe not on your podcast.
Well, it has nothing to do with politics in this particular case. Let's put it that way. I think a lot of politics are discussed over it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think a lot of bourbon and politics go hand in hand, at least for our side of the aisle right now, I'm sure.
Amen.
In your home. Mark, it's good to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on here. We'll make sure that we get that link shared out for the MASH and encourage people to tune in 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. right here on 97.1.
All right, Annie. Thank you.
Talk to you later. Mark Cox of the Mark Cox Morning Show there at Mark Cox 971. Go follow him on Twitter and like his Facebook page as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, there's some other stuff to talk about. We're going to talk in the 2 o'clock hour about Saturday Night Live. You might not know this because you, like me, probably haven't watched Saturday Night Live for a long time. But they went in on Joe Biden. And it's kind of funny. So we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. Stick around. More Annie Fry Show right around the corner.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show. Interact with Annie on Facebook. The Annie Fry Show. The Annie Fry Show is streaming online. Watch us live on YouTube and subscribe. Follow Annie on Twitter at Annie Fry Show.
Wasting on these phony, trumped-up culture wars, this fake outrage that the right-wing media is peddles to juice their ratings. And the fact that he's willing to go along with it instead of talking about serious problems that actually affect serious people, that's a shame. That's not what this election's about. That's not what you need, Virginia. Instead of forcing our communities to cut back at a time when we're just starting to recover, we should be doing more to support people who are educating our kids and keeping our neighborhoods safe.
What kind of issues are we being? Are we trumping up for ratings? Because I'm pretty sure that inflation, which we have discussed, and if you're thinking that inflation isn't really a big thing, listen to the Secretary
of
the
Treasury.
And of course,
Americans haven't seen inflation like we've experienced recently in a long time.
Yeah.
You know what, President Obama? That doesn't really sound like right-wing media. It's the Treasury Secretary Yellen. Who's Biden's Treasury Secretary of the Treasury? I mean, like, real issues that are facing real American people, parents. If you, first of all, do you know that today that the school board association, the national, I think it's the, what is the NSBA, I think it is, they issued an apology for their letter that indicated that whole idea of domestic terrorism with parents across the country. They have basically rescinded their assumption that what is going on at school board meetings around the country is akin to domestic terrorism. They've brought that back. It's funny how that happened like the week after Merrick Garland fumbled all over the place in front of his when he was giving his testimony. So you have the school board, the National School Board Association, issuing an official documented apology that the domestic terrorism idea of parents who are coming to school board meetings and suggesting that what's going on in their kids' classroom is unacceptable. You have Terry McAuliffe, who wants to be the governor of the state of Virginia again. You have him saying the parents don't belong in the classroom. So he's going to, effectively, he is going to make sure that it stays that way. Do you, have you stopped for a second to realize how much power these teachers' unions have in our country right now? Unyielding power. If you look at the CDC regulations that came out on how we are to behave in the era of COVID, the teachers' unions are advising on those. They get to see them before they're released to the country, and they get they get that priority viewing, and they have a say at the table as to how this stuff is going to go. The teachers' unions have such a strong, strong say in how we are running our country, and it is not to benefit the students. And it's not even, dare I say, to benefit the teachers. It's to benefit the unions. The unions, think about this for a second. The unions, they get money from their union members, the teachers. For the most part, most people are members. They pay their dues. They fund the unions. The unions go and lobby politicians, which means that politicians and these union leaders are having conversations all the time about what's best for the union and how the politician can help them. The unions make massive financial donations to get politicians elected. There's a symbiotic relationship there that is the unions sustaining power with these elected officials and the elected officials sustaining legislations and regulations that benefit the unions. Union to politician, politician to union. Union to politician, politician to union. In that scenario there, that is everywhere in state government and in federal government, the teachers are not necessarily part of that cycle. Because the teachers' unions aren't always advocating for what's best for the teachers, the people who are actually funding it. And not even the teachers, we're not even talking about the students. We're not even talking about your kids and my kids who are supposed to be going into this publicly funded education system to get educated in a way that is going to make them competent employees one day. I mean, honestly, let's be real about this. The point of education is so that you can train up these children so that they can sustain themselves when the time comes for them to be independent of their parents. I mean, that's the point. All of the morals and the values and the right and the wrong and how we see the world and how we interact with the world, that's supposed to come out of the home. That's supposed to be the job of the parents. And we have seen government for decades work so hard to wedge themselves in between children and their parents so that they can have their say. And why? So that they can retain political power. I mean, if you feel dirty listening to that, you should. You absolutely should. This is the Fox News report from this weekend, 2 days ago. National School Boards Association, sorry for, quote, language in letter that likened parents to domestic terrorists. The National School Boards Association issued an apology Friday night. Why Friday night? Because hopefully we won't talk about it on Monday morning. But here I am. It's Monday afternoon, but they don't let me on in the morning. I've tried. Friday night for a letter sent to the Biden administration, which targeted some parents who are concerned about their child's school curriculum and said certain of their actions could be domestic terrorism. As you all know, there has been extensive media and other attention recently around our letter to President Biden regarding threats and acts of violence against school board members, the National School Board Association wrote in a memo. We wanted to write to you directly to address this letter. Quote, on behalf of NSBA, we regret and apologize for the letter. There was no justification for some of the language included in the letter. This is what they put there. And I don't see people talking about this right now because this is 2-3 days old news. That's how fast we move right now. According to this Fox News article from 2 days ago, after the NSBA claimed in its letter that some rhetorical clashes between school boards and parents may amount to domestic terrorism, Attorney General Merrick Garland issued a memorandum and instructed the FBI to take the lead on a task force to address threats against school officials, including creating a centralized way to report such threats. It took one letter from the NSBA, which they have since apologized for, to get the attention of the Attorney General of the United States to create basically a task force for you pesky parents who are infiltrating these school board meetings where you're screwing up the system. Your eyes are on things that you're not supposed to be looking at. School board meetings are boring. Running for school board and serving on the school board is boring, and it takes up too much of your time, and it's not one of those really important things like, is Donald Trump going to run for office in 2024? I cannot implore upon you how much more important your local school board election is. Don't even mention the name Donald Trump for the next 2 years, and I'm fine with it. But who's on your school board? Why aren't you? You waiting for somebody else to step up and stand in the gap right now? You have common sense. Why not you? If you don't know how to do it, if you don't know what you're doing, reach out to somebody who has done public service before. If you don't know who that is, post on social media that you would consider this and ask someone to guide you. Reach out to your you know, county Republicans and talk to them about how to get started. This is only going to get fixed with you. Forget about the circus that is, you know, the Trump situation. Put a tent on it. We've got elephants and clowns. It's a circus. In your local school district, we are putting the Attorney General of the United States on notice right now. When he gets this NSBA letter, he's putting American parents on notice. He's frightening them. He's trying to keep you quiet. Don't be quiet. He's wrong. The NSBA apologized for it. Jim Jordan, in this testimony, did you pull that sound last week? I don't know if it was old. Jim Jordan went in on Merrick Garland. Did we? I'm going to pull that. We'll play that when we come back. And he said, where are you getting your information about where these threats are coming from? You create this task force and you use these words, domestic terrorism, in regard to the parents of our American students because they're their children before they are your students. Where are you getting your information to push into the realm of discussing domestic terrorism when people challenge their local school boards? It was this letter. It was this letter that the school board association has come out and apologized for the words that they've used. That's where this came from. They acknowledged their mistake because last week was that big of a disaster. More Any Fry Show right around the corner. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.